Hello, TechEd, and welcome to back up your private cloud workload before it's too late. And what on earth is too late? I'll tell you. Too late's finding out that some developer's database, which he says is mission critical, but he's never told you about because he provisioned it as a self-service exercise and the project grew organically until it became mission critical, has started dropping tables like a drunk furniture removalist on a pogo stick. There's no backup. That is too late. Too late is finding out that someone deployed an update to the marketing department's private cloud-hosted web app without considering that the update might set off more red lights than the Amsterdam coffee district. That is too late. Too late's finding out that some bunyip has infected their private cloud virtual machines with malware that turns your data center into a command and control hub for a botnet that's sending out spam selling Tahitian inflatable zebras without any possibility of rollback. That is too late. Hello, TechEd. My name's Oren Thomas. I'm from Australia. This is Mike Ressler. He's from Belgium. And this is back up your private cloud workloads before it's too late.
Dude, how many coffees did you have this morning? Really?
I found this really cool coffee shop in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Like purple elephants.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you. Welcome. We're going to do this a little bit different today. We're going to build up a private cloud work solution with automation, and we're going to give some power to the end user to choose themselves what they want to back up. And instead of giving a lot of slides, talking a lot, we're going to try to do this with a lot of demos. But first, before we actually start, we're going to show you, or at least Oren is going to show me, and let's hope the network is holding, because this seems to be a problem this week. But we're going to try to show you what we're actually going to do, and then build it up step by step. And the idea here is, and I'm really hoping there are not too many developers in the room at this moment, because otherwise I'm already sorry. Well, you know, those developers, they build things, they do programming, and they build the SQL databases on a daily basis, right? Now, what they expect is that we do the backup. And yeah, it's in our job function, do the backup of SQL database. But they kind of fail to tell us when they created the database, and certainly, how do we need to backup? Daily, weekly, every hour, things like that. So 2 days later, they say, yeah, we had a new build, but something went wrong. We want to come back to version of the database, let's say version 1. And we're like, oh, we need to recover that. Yeah, which database? We don't know. So what we're going to try to do is show you that with the power of System Center, with DPM, which is a great backup solution, with Orchestrator, and with the self-service portal of Service Manager, that you as a backup admins can easily build a self-service solution for these people. And if they want to backup their own database, fine. Just type in the server name, type in the database, choose the protection. The higher the protection, the more money the department has to pay, sort of. And you're off, and everything is handled automatically. And okay, even better, when Oren is going to do the demo, he's going to do this demo now just, you know, to do the backup. But we're also going to show you that it's perfectly possible to allow those administrators, or to allow those, not the administrators, the developers, to say, okay, I want to go back to version whatever of the database. They can do it themselves. That we, as backup guys, are not disturbed by this manual work doing every day while we have much better work to do. Well, most of us, at least. All right, Oren?
Okay, well, I've clicked on that. I'm just waiting for it to come up. So the whole idea is if you've got a self-service environment where people are allowed to deploy their workloads in a self-service manner, you need to come up with a way that they can back up and protect those workloads. So here, what we're going to show you first is what we're going to build. And we're building here very simple, a simple interface. Add a SQL database into protection. This is what we're building in the, showing you first, and then we're going to build it. So first thing we need to have the user provide is that they've got to know their server name. In this case, it's SQL. Now, we've built a few databases in SQL Server. We've got an Australia database, and we've got a Belgium database. Mike, which one should we back up?
I don't know. You choose. Which country needs the best backup?
I wouldn't care to speculate, mate. Which
one? All right. Australia?
Australia.
Yeah.
You sure? No, I think Belgium.
Belgium? Here we go.
Yeah, do you know why?
Nope.
Because I went to that country party the other night, and if there's anything that needs backup, it's a bit of Belgians.
So, yeah, that's true. After the country party, we do need some backup.
Okay, so what protection type do you reckon Belgium needs?
Oh, of course, gold. I mean, we're the best country of Europe.
Really? Okay. I thought that was Austria, because it sounds like Australia. Okay, so all we need to do is put that information in, and that's it. All a user needs to know, what server is it hosted on, or what instance is it hosted on, what's the database name, what protection level do I need, click submit, and bang, that sends it off into the internals of what we're going to build. Now, the other part of what we're going to build is you've got users that have gone, oh, great, I've gone and put this workload into self-service backup protection. But, you know, I'm a bit paranoid. I need to know what backups exist. So the last part of what we're going to do is actually, and we're doing this in a very basic manner, you can do it in a more sophisticated manner, but we've got to build it within a lot of time, is to actually just go, hey, I want to see what backups exist of my database. So in the case here, we're looking at, for example, let's say the Australia database, and we click View Report, and what it does is it goes off and it finds all of the recovery points. So someone who has put their database or their workload into protection can, without ringing up the IT department, go, great, this is all of the backup snapshots that we have of this workload. This is where we can recover from. These are our recovery points.
Okay, cool. All right, so basically in our agenda, what we're going to tell you, besides the fact that we're going to build up this entire what we just showed, we're going to tell you a bit why we still need backup, because I'm not sure how it is with you guys, but when I go to different companies, that's the first thing I get from managers. Why should I invest in backup? We've got everything. It's not necessary. Well, we're going to try to give you some arguments that you can take into your own companies, or if you're a consultant, that you can take to your customers. Then we're going to talk about very briefly, very shortly, because I'm pretty sure you're hammered already with the information from all the other sessions. We're going to talk to you about what is DPM, what is Orchestrate, and what is Service Manager, and what parts are we actually going to use in those demos. And then all the next parts are just going to be demo, 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 and a lot of us with bad jokes, which you probably by 12:30 or something, you're tired of us. But anyway, try to follow us, and by the end, you will have this solution.
There are only bad jokes because they're not very good.
Yeah, true.
Okay. So the first question you have to deal with when you're talking about private cloud is people say, well, why do I need backup? We've got this insane infrastructure that we've paid. We've got RAID 10 arrays. We've got multiple power supplies. We've got VM servers in Singapore. We've got VM servers in Sydney. We've got VM servers in Paris. What, Mike, if I've got this amazing redundant infrastructure that I can pick up an axe and smash and smash and smash, and oh, goodness, this is fun, that I could smash really hard and destroy the servers, but the systems still stay online, why do I need backup?
Well, the answer to that, Oren, is, I think, pretty simple. Even if you have all these technologies, it won't protect you against data-corrupting malware. I'm not talking about all the viruses that come in, because you're probably very well protected with all the great things, but just internal malware could happen, right? Another thing what we see is we call this unforced user errors.
That's when someone does something really stupid, isn't it?
No, in Europe we call this unforced user errors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're a little bit more polite.
People in Europe never do anything wrong.
No,
they're really smart.
Yeah.
They're really cultured, and they're not like people back in Australia.
Here you go.
Fantastic.
Finally, you understand it. It took me 1 year to. Never mind. Also, misbehaving applications. Now, this never happens, but when we go back to the developers, it could be that there's maybe a bug in the software.
No. Would developers ever leave a bug in a software? Would they ever check something in without testing it fully?
Guys, come on. These are administrators. They know better.
Yeah, no.
Anyway, it can happen that it destroys the data. You do an update. Something goes wrong. The data, and there you are. You do an update. You got the SQL database with millions of records, and something went wrong. It's replicated to Singapore, Sydney, whatever he said, but it's still wrong. The data is wrong, so you need your backup. And last but not least, updates. Now, we all know these days that Windows updates or Microsoft updates are pretty safe. It's been a couple of years that I actually had a Microsoft update that kind of destroyed some data, But there are not only Microsoft updates, there are many more updates that could go wrong.
Like your anti-malware updates. I mean, how many times have we heard in the last few years of an anti-malware vendor releasing an update that seems to recognize system files as virus files and trashes the system? You've deployed your private cloud, great, you update your anti-malware because you're being really good and malware protected, even though, you know, there shouldn't be malware on those machines, and then bang, you've lost everything. That can happen.
Yeah. So
the challenge of backup in private cloud environments, because this is we're moving to a private cloud, we're moving to a different model of how IT operates. Back in the past, IT was almost your nanny, looked after you, fed you, clothed you, changed your nappy. They did everything for the organisation. But what's happened now is we have a new generation of users, a new generation of users that want to be empowered. And that means that they can take control of their own things. Of course, the problem is that sometimes things go wrong because these empowered users haven't been used to thinking of IT like administrators have had to think of IT. So what happens in private cloud environments is you have users that are able to very quickly and rapidly deploy their own workloads. The problem is they don't tell anybody about it until something goes wrong. Can you go and rescue this? Did you back it up? Can you go and rescue this? You can use things like Operations Manager to go out and scan your private cloud, but essentially your ability to audit what is out there becomes more challenging because you're allowing people to deploy whatever they want. How do you keep track of it? So that's part of it. You can certainly audit their utilization, but you don't know. And another part of it is that you might know everything that's out there, but you don't know what's actually worthy of protection. There is a lot of junk that will be deployed in self-service environments. Give users the ability to deploy whenever they want, and a lot of what they want to deploy will be rubbish. And that's not rubbish from a personal perspective of the user. It's rubbish from the perspective of the business. It might be a prototype that they're doing on a project. Now, it would be very nice to think that systems would go out there and reclaim and remove these projects. But who here has ever sat there and looked at a server and go, wow, that server's been running for a couple of years for a project that was cancelled some time ago? Who's ever found that in their own server rooms? Exactly. Okay, so you get these zombie workloads that are sitting out there. So how do you know what's good? How do you know what's bad? And also there becomes the bigger issue. If you give the users the tools of these private clouds, you give them this infrastructure through which they can deploy whatever they want, but who becomes responsible for rescuing them when they fall off the side of the ship, when they're drowning? Because there's still going to be a mentality, there's still going to be a history of thinking the IT department is going to come and save us. Well, no, because in a self-service environment, at a certain point, you are not only taking responsibility for deploying your applications, you are also taking responsibility for the recoverability of your applications.
All right, so DPM, one of the tools we use.
Okay, so why we build this on DPM? It's a Microsoft conference, and DPM is absolutely, completely, and utterly the best tool for backing up and recovering Microsoft workloads. It's built to look after Exchange Server, SQL Server, SharePoint, Dynamics, Hyper-V, Windows Server. So here we're doing an example of using it to back up and recover SQL Server. This applies completely across the board. You can use our solution to recover Exchange, recover SharePoint. What we're teaching here is we're teaching a theory of how this works. Now, a DPM, you're backing up every 15 minutes to a DPM server. That can go out to another disk. It can go out to tape if it's necessary. You can even throw it up to the cloud. So you can actually do backup to a cloud-hosted provider so that if your data center gets hit by a flood, and this happened a couple of years ago in Australia, the big city of Brisbane, the central business district, got absolutely flooded quite deep, and there was about 15 data centres that were completely lost because they were basically just filled with water. So they were sitting in the basement of buildings, and when the water came up to so high, those basements got flooded. And there's pictures of near one of the big banks, sharks swimming up and down the street because they'd come up the river. And, you know, that sort of thing does sort of happen in Australia. It's that sort of country.
Yeah, and if you look at the product itself, because I come to many customers and or I talk to a lot of people and they say, well, yeah, you know, DPM, that's that little program in the System Center suite, and it's a good backup tool for some small business shops. But actually, it is a tool that's ready for the enterprise. If you look at the scalability, and we're talking now for each server, and unfortunately, I have to say now it's or, it's not and. Well, you can backup more or less, depending on your configuration, you can back up around 100 production servers per DPM server. That's actually a lot. If you even look at competing products, you will see that 100 production servers per server is quite a lot.
Now, Mike, you go out, you work with this product in the real world, in Europe, so it's relevant to this audience. Yes. Now, you're under NDA, but give someone an idea, give the audience an idea of what the biggest workload you've actually gone out and protected with DPM.
Okay, so the biggest workloads I actually did was an Exchange 2010 DAC, and it was around 25 terabytes. And we did that with one server. Another workload was around the 25 terabyte, a little bit less, SharePoint, which we also protect with one server. Well, I actually used two. We did DPM, two DPM as additional backup, but it is ready for this enterprise. If you look at it, 2,000 SQL Server databases per DPM server. And if you're a company that has more than 2,000 SQL services, contact me afterwards. I would love to do business with you just to find out how I can scale it. But it is a lot for the enterprise, certainly if you're looking at the markets that are busy here. So the second product we want to see is Orchestrator. And let's see how much time I need to spend on this slide. Who knows Orchestrator? A lot? Okay. Some of you don't. So, very basic, Orchestrator is our workflow engine tool. What it does is it takes some steps that you normally do manual and it will automate it for you. So, think about the very stupid steps. When you need to install a computer, what you do is you unpack the computer. That's step one. Step two is like installing the operating system. Step three is joining to the domain. Step four is installing some apps. Step five is doing whatever else post-process needs to be done. Five steps. Orchestrator is meant to automate this. Now, unpacking the computer, that's not yet possible, but imagine, right? So that is exactly what I'm going to use to automate the steps where the end user is telling me, well, it's this server and this database and this type of protection. That is what I'm going to use, that parameters, to do every step. Find the server, get the information. Find the data, get the information. Now find the specific database, sorry about that, get the information, take the backup.
Now, it's possible to do all of that with PowerShell, but one of the things that's very interesting about PowerShell is even though it's a phenomenally powerful tool, most systems administrators have the enthusiasm for scripting that my 9-year-old son has for a visit to the dentist. Okay, so Orchestrator makes automation very drag and drop. It simplifies the process, it makes it less complex, and in making it less complex, you can automate more with less time spent on it.
Yep. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to use the System Center Data Protection Manager integration pack. And the integration pack within Orchestrator is kind of a big box that holds all of these little steps that I talked about, and it has there a activity for. And one activity is one step. So with that integration pack, and we got a few here, as you can see, we can create a recovery point, which is basically DPM terminology for let's take a backup. We can do a recovery. We can all do this kind of things. Now, the downside of this integration packet that it's kind of a confusing one. It's actually fully built on PowerShell. So everything which you would do with PowerShell within DPM, you're going to do exactly the same thing, only without typing the words yourself. And it's a bit confusing, and I will tell you that also when I do the demo, how you need to do it, because some of these activities we use for different things. One activity, we're doing three different things. So it's a bit confusing, but for the moment you start working with it and you play a bit with it, you will see it's a very powerful integration pack which can automate a lot in the backup world. And this integration pack, it's also downloadable, is actually the additional extension into Orchestrator. There are more, not only for DPM, but for today we're going to keep it with DPM.
Now, the last component that we're going to use is Service Manager, because for all of this automation works very well at the systems administrator level. The systems administrator can understand, although not necessarily be enthusiastic about PowerShell scripting, or they can use Orchestrator to use runbooks. But when you're talking about the end user essentially just wants a quick web interface where they provide the minimal level of information that they need to provide to perform a complex task. So what we're doing is building the plumbing But Service Manager allows us to build a nice web interface that hooks into all of these System Center components and allows this task to occur without the user having any understanding or needing any understanding of the complexities that go on underneath the surface.
Okay. And I think with that, we have talked way too much on slides, and it's time for some demos, and let's start building up the solution. All right. So I need my orchestrator server. So this is the orchestrator server. It has a SQL database on it. Probably not best practices, but you know, these are demos. But the idea is this is our runbook editor, and here we're going to create our simple workflows. So let me start by simply saying we're going to create a new folder, and this is Europe. Here we go. And within that folder, I'm going to create a new runbook. I'm going to rename it, and at the same time do a checkout. Why would I need to do a checkout? Very simple. That means I'm working on it. All the rest, please don't touch it. And if it would be one that's already in production and I'm doing work at the same time, that could lead to strange things. So we do a checkout. We call this protect DB SQL, something like that. Doesn't matter. It's a name. Here we go. And now I'm going to start dragging my activities on the field. And the first thing I'm going to do is actually work with the runbook control, which means, well, we're going to start this. How can you start a workflow? We can call it, we can schedule it, or we can monitor something, and based on a filter, it will start automatically. In this case, what I want is it has to be called with the service manager. He will be the one calling it. And I need some parameters. And which parameters do I need? Well, let's see. I need the database name, I need the server name, and the last thing that those users were able to select was actually the type, the protection type, the gold, the silver, or something like that. Okay, that's it. Now I'm going to build up the rest of my workflow to see what kind of steps we're going to do. So this is the Data Protection Manager integration pack. And we're going to protect, we're going to start dragging our activities onto the workflows. First thing we're going to do is get data source. And here it becomes difficult. The next thing I'm going to do is get data source. The third thing I'm going to do is get data source. So I'm going to use three times the same activity. And each time I'm going to request different information and get different information. So this is a bit confusing in the beginning, and we have to be honest. I think we can say we know a lot about DPM. We also knew a lot about the PowerShell commands, but starting to work with this, it took us a couple of hours before we figured out how everything was running beneath.
But the real key with any sort of automation building is every minute that you spend working on automation is tens of hours, if not days, that you are saving of tedium later in your work life. You sit there and go, oh my gosh, I'm spending a Wednesday morning writing automation. But think of all of those Friday afternoons that you're not spending doing that tedious process, click by click by click.
Yeah. And now we got this three times get data source, and it will become clear what I'm actually going to do. The next thing, of course, I need to do is protect the data source. So at that moment, we're going to take that database, we're going to tell DPM, this is a database, put it somewhere in a protection group, make it safe. Protection group is in DPM basically the rules of how it's going to protect it. So for a protection group, you can say, for example, well, it has to be kept for 5 days on disks and 7 years on tape. I want every hour, I want to have a synchronization that all the logs are copied to the database, and every 6 hours, I really want to take a backup. So we're going to protect that data source, and in the end, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to say, okay, and now do a backup. So the instant that they actually asking for it, a couple of minutes later, they have the first backup of the SQL database. Now, within Orchestrator, what I need to do then is actually make sure that my workflow has a logic order. So I'm going to connect all of these together. And not only these are errors, this can be in more advanced workbooks. This can also be your control mechanism, because what it says by default now is, if the previous activity was a success, go to the next one. Now, in real life, you're not going to use this runbook, because that means you have no error control at all. In real life, you're going to build in additional errors and say, if something goes wrong, I don't know, send an event, write something in the event log, send an email to an administrator, something like that.
But you can build an amazing amount of internal logic so that there's error correction. For example, one of the things that we're talking about is the idea that what happens if someone comes along and tries to put a database into protection that's already being protected? Well, you can build the logic in there that the web page comes back and says, mate, you're already protected. This is the protection you've got. Do you want to change your protection or something like that? So you can build that into Orchestrator at that level.
Yeah. So the first activity, I just renamed it, and I said get protection group. And what I'm going to do with this is I'm going to open it, and I'm going to say, well, talk to DPM and give me the information of the protection group where I want to store it. Now, remember, we choose types, SQL Gold, Bronze, Silver. What we actually did is, well, if they choose gold, that means we have to go to protection group, that one. Now, we named them the same thing to make it a bit more easier on us during our demos, but this is not necessary. You can easily build something in, like, if the parameter is gold, then go to protection group with a very difficult name based on some standards. But in this case, what we did was make it the same thing.
And so, it's also possible to go in if you've got, for example, very important people within your company who are deploying self-service applications to automatically assign those people gold level protection. So even though the CEO might say, oh, I only need bronze, you make sure the CEO has gold level protection, because if you're going to be recovering for the CEO, you want to make sure it works and they get back as much as possible.
Yeah. So first thing I do is I connect to a DPM server. And this is a global setting which you can do in every orchestrator. You can actually have multiple. If I would have like 10 DPM servers, then here I would be choosing to which DPM server we could go. So, but in this case, I only have one, so I go to that specific one. And then I say, what do you want to search? Well, actually, I want to search the information of the protection group. And which protection group? I'm going to subscribe to the published data. And the published data is actually all the information that comes from the previous activity or activities. So in this case, we only did one activity, get the parameters. Well, that means that I already have the type, SQL Gold, SQL Bronze, and so on, which I can now use to find my protection group. With that, if this activity is done, what is going to happen is all the information of the protection group, and we mean we are in Microsoft world, GUIDs and these strange long numbers with a lot of things we don't know out of our head, which you actually need to use in PowerShell to do something, are now on my data bus, and I can reuse for other activities. So the second activity, again, get data source, but now I'm going to say, well, give me all the information of the server that we're going to protect. Get server ID. Here we go. Again, I'm going to connect to the DPM server. This time, I'm actually going to search for a production server. And which one? Well, subscribe, publish data. Look, this is all the information I get from the previous activity. What I want now is I want to go back to initialize data, and I actually want to see the server name. Here we go. Still not that difficult. The third one is a little bit more tricky. What we're now going to search is we got this server. And the funny thing is, if I leave this activity away and then just take the last two ones, that means at that moment DPM will protect every workload on that server, meaning if it's a SQL server, all SQL databases. It will do bare metal recovery of that server. It will take the system state of that server, and so on. Every volume. Why? Because what I've got now is all the data sources that are actually on that server. Now, what I really want is that specific database. So the next one is I'm going to find the specific database and what the GUID of that one is. All right, here we go. Again, choose DPM. We leave it on production server. What I want is the production server name, which I just found out from the previous activity. Production server name, here we go. And I'm going to put in a filter. And with this filter, I'm going to say add name equals, well, the published data again, the database name. Here we go. Now, that also means, because now I do it on name, and we're really going to search for the SQL database name, if we just put, say, type equals SQL, that we just protect every SQL database on that server. So you got a lot of possibilities with these filters. You got a lot of possibilities you can do for self-protection. That also indeed would mean if the developer just says, I've got a new virtual machine, that you can take an entire backup if you want to. Okay? Here we go. Finish. All right, we got that done. We got all the information, time to actually do the protection. So, here we go again, connect to DPM. Now, those who know DPM, they know there are actually three methods to create a replica. And the replica is just the first initial backup, meaning a full copy of the data. All the rest is the deltas, the changes, right? Now, when you create a protection group, you got three methods. You can do the replica now. You can do it on a later stage, meaning you say tonight, 8 o'clock, everybody's home, don't care that the network is doing some more work. Or you can do it manually, where you actually have to copy the data of the production server, do it manually through a USB device or whatever, and bring it to the DPM server. Now, in the integration pack, they forgot, or maybe it was by intention, could be as well, now. So the only two options I've got is manual, or do it on a later date. So we figured we have to do a demo here. Doing it on a later date, that's kind of risky, because then maybe it's something not working. So we found a workaround. We choose manual. Then the data source ID is going to be, well, we found out with the previous activity. Here we go, data source ID. Okay. And this one is this one is one of these strange behaviors within PowerShell and within the DPM. I need to find the data source ID, which is a GUID very long. So the next question he says is, give me the protection group. Now, the idiot in me said, hey, cool, I need the GUID of the protection group. Trying, fail, what is wrong? Well, it doesn't say ID. In the PowerShell command, you only need the name of the protection group. Then he will do the GUID searching himself. So think about it. If you use this activity, it can save you some time. So here we go. Publish data, and remember we got all the information of the protection group in the second activity, which is here, and now I actually need just the protection group name. Where is it? Here it is. Okay. Now, I'm doing manually, but you see the button optional properties. If you would choose do it on a later, you could add this field, replica creation time, and then fill in a date and an hour. Maybe even put that as well on the self-service portal so that the guys can choose which hour, things like that. But that's not for the demo today. All right. Now, the trick is we do it manually. So basically what we need to do is copy the data of the production server and move it to, which we're not going to do because we want to automate. And the trick we find is, well, we're just going to say create a recovery point now. And what DPM will say is, yeah, that's great, but I don't have my replica yet, so I'll just do my replica first. End of story.
So it generates that initial replica, automatically putting whatever object you've chosen in your self-service portal into protection. And it's also possible to create a runbook that uses this create recovery point so that if you've got someone, even if they've got a particular schedule, they can go and trigger a backup prior to making a change.
Yep.
They don't have to wait for the schedule change.
All right. And that is my workflow. So six steps which I built to automate what we are doing. And that means that, again, without any error handling and things like that, but that's actually the only steps we need to do and which will give us this self-service capabilities for our end users. And now we choose SQL, but you can imagine that you could do it with other workloads, you could do it with file shares and things like that. So you have a lot of options to automate all this stuff. And with that, back to you.
Okay, so what we've had Mike do is we've had Mike build the guts at the orchestrator level. What I'm going to do is I'm going to build the guts at the service manager level. The first thing I'm going to do is going to create a management pack. Now, what a management pack does is as it does in all System Center products, is it functions as a container. It allows us to put an entire project in a container, so if we want to blow it away later, we just have to kill the container rather than doing something else. So in this case, we'll call the management pack TechEd 2012. And we can provide a description if we want, but that's only going to be internal to Service Manager. It's not going to be a user-facing, so we're not particularly concerned about it. The next thing we need to do is we need to go into the library node and we're going to create some templates. These templates are going to... before I do that, actually, I probably need to sync the connector. I'll go back to administration. I'll sync the connector. Syncing the connector makes Service Manager reach out to Orchestrator and say, OK, Mike's done all of this work. I want to be able to see it so I can use it in Service Manager. All of that stuff...
Sorry, guys, I made a big mistake. Don't mention it. But what I forgot, actually, is before you can synchronize the way any product, what did I forgot?
You forgot to check it in.
Check in. Sorry.
Mate, I thought Europeans were infallible. So much for that fantasy being blown. So what we need to do is we need to synchronise the connector. Once that synchronisation request has been set, it goes out to the orchestrator services. What do you got for me? And the orchestrator services, well, these are the runbooks that have been checked in that you can then go and use.
Very important one here, lessons learned as well. If you do this runbook and you immediately jump to service manager say made the connection and then you don't see the runbook, don't worry about it because the service of orchestrator gets synchronized every 15, every 30 minutes, something like that. So if you're just too fast, then it can be that you don't see your runbook yet. There are some SQL scripts where you can force it to happen, but always get yourself a coffee and then see your runbook afterwards in Service Manager.
Just don't get it from that shop in Amsterdam that I went to this morning. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to create a template. This first one is going to sync to that runbook that Mike created, so we call it TechEd 2012 runbook add SQL DB into protection. What we do here is we choose the class, and in this case, the class that we need is a runbook automation activity. So we select that, and here we want it to go into the TechEd 2012 management pack. So when I create that, what it does is it's going to load up a form, and this form is going to allow me to start putting in some information. So the first thing I want to do here is I want to say that this is ready for automation. It does not require user intervention to approve because we want all of this plumbing to happen automatically. So the name is our TechEd 2012 add SQL DB into protection. And we set an area. In this case, we're going to assign it to the infrastructure area. The next thing we do is we come across here and we select which runbook we're going to use. So request SQL DB into protection is the runbook we're going to use for that. So now that we're happy with that, we make sure that it's set for automation. We click OK. So that's our first template. We're going to build another template, which is a service request template. Just wait for that to come through.
Just to inform you, it looks what he's going to do is going to be a lot of work. He's going to build two templates, he needs to build a service offering, he needs to build a request offering. And it's like, what, so many work just to put a page with three questions on an internet site? That's a lot of work. But many of these things he is doing now, you can reuse. For example, the service offering you will be able to reuse because you make that once, but it's a collection of many different requests. The management pack, I'm hoping you're not making every time again a management pack because then after time you will have lots of those and that's also not so healthy for your environment. So many of the steps we are doing now, and we're just doing it because we need to show you the different steps, but you do this once and then you're going to start reuse different steps.
So you can start with those templates and modify them as necessary. You do adding a SQL database into protection, it's not too far to go to put SharePoint into protection. So when we do this, again, I click OK here, and what we've got there, oops-a-daisy, I didn't actually know. So here we go, we give it a name. So this one we go again, TechEd 2012 service request template, add DB into protection. And what we need to do is we need to assign an urgency. In this case, we can say medium, but this is really how we are going to treat this within Service Manager. We put it in area, we can say, again, infrastructure. But the activity we want is we want to take that first template that we just built, which was our TechEd 2012 runbook at SQL DB into protection, and click that. And that means that that's actually going to be done. That brings up that template we just edited. So we click OK there, and we click OK there, and we've done.
Very important on these activities is now what we do now is if somebody makes a request, it's automatically approved and the runbook gets kicked off, right? In real life, you're probably not going to do that. Again, we're IT guys, we don't want to work, and even our service desk or our help desk or whatever it's being called, you try to avoid as much work as possible for those people. So what you can do is say, well, it's user X that did the request, and you will get that information, of course, through that portal because they're logged on. And their line manager should approve, or their project manager or something like that. Before you actually do something, it's somebody needs to approve because, well, basically, it's a budget. It's a matter of budget, right? So you can all build those little activities and those things in without any issues.
Okay, so the next thing we're going to do here is we're going to create a service offering. Now, the service offering is what the user's actually going to see when they log on to the website. So we give it a title. In this case, we'll call it the TechEd 2012 Service Offering. We can even give it a little icon, so we can give it a TechEd header. We can give it an overview, use this for self-service backup and recovery, and again we can provide more information. And the more information you provide, the more helpful it is to a user who's encountering this for the first time and needing to use it for that critical task of performing backup and recovery.
Everything you're actually doing in these two next wizards he's showing, and certainly in the last one, but in this one, will be seen by the end user. So the more information you give him, the more nicer you write it. Well, you know how users are in documentation. You're very happy with manuals. You read everything, and they will make sure they're not disturbing you.
Most of them are going to ignore what you write here, but it's really a cover-your-backside scenario so that you have specified very explicitly what services you're offering and what services you are not offering. So if a user comes to you and says, I thought this meant this, you go back through the wizard and you say, look, mate, go back and look at that web page and look what it says explicitly. We are not making promises that we can't fulfil. We are making these very explicit promises. So although here we just flick through it and go, yeah, whatever, next, it's what you'd really be doing here is actually spending some time being very specific about the types of services you're offering and the types of rescue you're offering. Because with backup, it's very critical that you say what you're backing up. It's like an insurance policy. Your insurance policy on your house and your car determines what you're going to get paid for if something happens and what you are not going to get paid for if something happens.
Must be something Australian. All my users read my carefully prepared documents.
Mate, that's what they tell you. Okay, so here we're specifying knowledge articles, here we're specifying request offerings. We choose here to put it into published status and we give an offering owner. In this case, it's going to be me. So we review the summary and then we create that service offering. Now that we've got our service offering, what we need to do is create a request offering. And I do apologise, Service Manager is one of those products that's a bit like Hogwarts. It's full of wizards. So it's not the good wizards like Gandalf, unfortunately, it's the kind of the more boring wizards. So here we go create a request offering. And the request offering is going to be TechEd 2012 request offering add SQL DB into protection. Now, if this seems like it's like, oh my gosh, I cannot remember what on earth these blokes are doing up on the stage, remember that this session is recorded in high definition and will be available. The Orlando version of the session already is on Channel 9's website. So you can actually see everything that's going on the website, all the objects we're using, all the information that we're inputting, all of the bits and pieces that Mike was putting together in the Orchestrator runbook are available for your review later. So you're able to actually access and utilize this information rather than digging through heaps of documentation trying to work out what on earth we're up to. So here I'm selecting the template, and in this case here it's our TechEd 2012 service request template. Put your database into protection.
Just give me a second on that one. So what he does now is select a template and he filled in some fields in it. That means every time one of these end users is going to request protection, within Service Manager is going to create a record saying this guy asked for protection for that database with a lot of extra information. So you keep that information and you know as a backup admin, last week I had 7 additional databases into protection. So you can also use that information to go to your peers and say, look man, everybody's ordering gold here, that's great, but I need more storage. Give me more money to builds my DPM infrastructure.
And that's, like that. Yeah, that's the other great part of Service Manager is you do have a complete catalog and a record of everything that's going on. Because as IT moves towards a service in a company, you need to be able to be very granular in your ability to charge back to the organization for the services that they are consuming. So if they want that gold protection level, they're getting charged for that. And departments are very reluctant to give money to the IT department when it's nebulous. If you're very specific with what they're spending money on, they're a lot more willing to actually give the money. So what I'm doing here is this is the user prompts that will be seen on the page. And here I've said enter your server name, database name and protection level. So what they need to do is they need to put in a server name. And that's just going to be a text box. They need to give me their database name. And that needs to be a text box, but you can actually hook this in so that they'd actually be able to have Operations Manager go and find all of their databases, and they could actually select it from a list if that's practical. And the last name is Protection Level. Now, for Protection Level, instead of just getting them to enter it because they won't actually know what it is, what we'll get them to do is choose from a simple list. So we go to our next here and we configure our user prompts, and I go here and go configure, and this allows me to specify the names of our protection levels. So I can have SQL Gold, you could have SQL Awesome, you could have SQL Ordinary and SQL Are You Joking, but we're going SQL Silver and SQL Bronze.
Important here is that you can, all that information that you put on that website, in this case it's a list we type ourselves, and they have to fill in the server name, and I know in reality that's not going to work because people make mistakes in typing. But what you can do is actually query all that information out of the Configuration Manager database off Server Manager. If you're connected to Operations Manager, if you're connected to Configuration Manager, if you're connected to whatever I know, all that information is inside.
It's just too big for us to build in this demo, but it's possible to use all of that intelligence that System Center has about your network to actually populate these wizards so that, again, with self-service, you've got to make it dead simple. It's got to be so simple that an ordinary user who does not understand the concepts involved is able to competently put their workloads into protection and, should it be necessary, bring them out, or at least if they put it into protection and they come to you and say, look, it's all gone, it's all dead, it's all gone, can you help me? You go, right, you've got it into protection, that's great. I can help you because you've given me something to work with. If you don't have that to work with, if it's too hard, they won't use it. And remember, if it is too hard, they will ignore it. So make it as simple as possible. So last thing here is I'm going to set the bronze level as default. So if they're at least smart enough to find the web page, they will have a minimal level of protection. So the final step here is to map values to prompts. So here we've got our database name. So I say, OK, map that to the database name. Here we've got our server name. I go map that to the server name. And this last one here is going to be mapped to the protection level.
What he's doing here actually is, you saw my parameters in my runbook. He is mapping now the input fields to my runbook so that they can work together and that the correct fields are, you know, that not server name is a database name and vice versa.
So here we've gone here, we've got our knowledge articles. Mostly what we want to do is publish this so this actually appears. We give our offering owner, in this case, again, I'm going to say I own it. So we say Oren. We go next, we've got our summary, and we create. So the last component in this is to actually take that published request offering and add it to the service offering. So we're going, this is the request offering, which is our add database into protection. Our service offering is a higher level one, which is we're saying this is our category of TechEd services, and we're going to add this to that. So we just have to wait for Service Manager. And one of the issues that you do find with Service Manager is that Service Manager is a bit of a resource vampire. It will take as much resources as you can throw at it. So keep that in mind when you're using it, that the product is not necessarily lean, mean and green. It's actually a bit of a
I'm going to say it is actually working very well if you have indeed a decent hardware. Running everything on a desktop, which we are doing as we speak, on a simple SATA disk, is not the best idea for a service that's all the time working with SQL and things like that. So
Okay.
We don't have the 1 million IOPS that they showed in the second day of Taget here, unfortunately.
Okay, so here we've got all of our requests. No, that's not what I want, is it? I want... Which one do I want? I want publish request offerings. Sorry. Here, publish request offerings. I select our TechEd 2012 request offering. And then what I do here is go add to service offering. We've got our service offerings. We've got our TechEd 2012 service offering. We add that and we go OK. So what we can now do is we can now go back to our Service Manager portal. We can come back home and we can let it load. And what we'll see here is...
They get 2012 service offering. You're just not seeing it.
Yes.
It is there.
Where?
On the left, bottom.
Sorry. Oh, yes, it is. Sorry. I put it in the wrong category. So here we've got available requests. So we can choose this available request. And what happens now is we can go to the request and we get that page that I showed you at the start of the presentation, which has our server name, our database name, and our protection level, and you can go from there.
So again, as we said, it looks difficult. We do a lot of steps, but once you've did it, you will see it's pretty easy. Now, what we did now is just backup, right? Everything is in protection, great, but that means those developers will still call us, give me a recovery, which means we're still doing more things than we actually want to. The next thing we're going to show you is how to create that runbook to do the recovery. Now, I'm not going to start this one from zero to save some time, and because that would be just a repeat of the first session. And it also means, and we're not going to do that as well, again, for time, but because we already created these templates, we already have some offerings that we can now reuse parts and build a second on this page. If I just quickly go back here, a second under this service offering saying, well, add SQL database into protection, and the next one will be recover SQL database into protection. So let me quickly show you. Here we go. A workflow that actually could request SQL recovery. Again, initialize data. Now, here we only need two parameters. Why? Well, they're only going to fill in the server name and the database name. By the way, one of the questions I got when we did the session before was, can they just not only fill in the SQL database name alone? The answer to that, it depends. If you have a very good environment with great naming conventions, yes. Why not? Then I can actually go to DPM and let him search for the specific data source without the need of knowing the server. However,
in a private cloud environment, you're probably not going to have a very good naming convention, because if people are doing it themselves, you're going to end up with some pretty extraordinary names, like people's database named after people's cats, their dogs, their hamsters.
And the last thing you have to remember in a SQL world, and that is also something we've learned the hard way, they want to recover from time to time the master database. Guess how many master databases are there in your environment? A lot, apparently. So if you let them select themselves on eyes closed, will be that one, you found yourself in trouble. Now, what we do now is, again, I just dragged an activity to find the data source. Get data source. I named it get server ID. Why? I need to get the details of the production server. Not the DPM server, actually the production server where it once was. Okay? We got this one. No filters yet, just the information about the server. Next one is get the data source ID. Again, now we're going to look in the in the protection groups in DPM. Which one is actually matching? And how we're going to do that is, well, we get the protection group name from the server data, and now we're filtering and saying, if the data source name equals the database, we found it. Now, if we found it, the next thing we're going to do is, give me the recovery point. Why? Every backup of the database is one recovery point. So if this database has already been backup for, 5 days and 3 times a day, that means 18 recovery points. And if you're a little bit in bad luck and you're doing a synchronization every hour to get the logs, well, I'm not going to do the math here. That's not my strongest point. But you can have easily 200-300 recovery points. Now, you can search for the latest, or you can search for all. In my example, I choose for the latest and just say, we're not going to give them an option, just recover the latest database. Although, certainly development environments, it would be more smart to say, give me all the recovery points, and based on what they selected in the portal on time and date, let's take the closest one to that and recover that one, right?
And you can go even further, of course, with SQL recovery, depending on the recovery model you've got of your database. You can actually do up to, you can roll back to a certain transaction. It's possible to build that automation into Orchestrator and then have that accessible within Service Manager so that someone comes up to a web portal and says, I want to come back to this particular transaction, or I want to come back to this particular point in time. Let me bring the database back there. I want to go back to a SQL server. I want to go back or just have the database exported out. And that's a very simple transition for DPM to do. But what you're again doing is you're building it so that users can do that themselves.
Okay. So the last thing I'm doing, I got all my information. I know which backup I want to recover is I'm going to actually do it, right? So the recovery type I choose for this example is recover to network folder. Although I can also say no, just do it straight to that database, mount it, great. Now, lessons learned from real life field, don't do it directly. Why? Sometimes they just choose the wrong thing in the self-service portal. Give it to them on a network folder and let them mount it themselves. Because recovering to the original instance will actually just overwrite the database. End of story.
Always with a self-service portal that's going to be used by inexperienced users, always try to build in as much intelligence to stop those sort of basic mistakes that we've all made when we started off as systems administrators that they're likely to make because they don't have our experience. Build your experience into the product.
You really just say that developers are inexperienced users?
No, but what we're seeing is we're seeing more people who are taking the role of development. As development tools become simplified, they become easier, you are getting more average users who don't necessarily have strict development training performing development tasks.
So what do I need to do recover? Well, the data source ID. I get the recovery source ID, all that information that comes from the previous activities with it, and I choose a target server name. To make it easy on myself, I choose a DPM name and a specific folder on the DPM server, but you could easily say, no, we have the server name because they typed it in, recover it to the original server, they have access to that server, it's their machine, and let them do recovery from there. And that's it. That's my workflow. It's actually one step less than doing the backup automatically, but there's nothing more to it. It's just knowing a bit and playing with these fields that will be the more difficult parts.
So the last part we want to show you is the ability for users to actually ascertain what has been backed up. If you've ever, anybody here use DPM in their environment? Anybody here ever played with configuring customized reports for DPM? Yes, there's not a lot of information out there, is there? No. So if you have a look at the recovery point, the default recovery point status report that's available for DPM, what you find is that there's not a lot of information that would be necessarily useful to an end user. What you really need is something a bit more like what I showed you in that first demo. So if we go here, what DPM has is it has SQL Server reporting services built into it. And SQL Server reporting services is really good for doing reports. And what you find is that most System Center administrators tend to be very fine with the canned reports that are included with System Center products, not so fine at building their own stuff. What I'm going to quickly show you here is how easy it is to extract data from DPM so that you can build your own reports about things like recovery points. So that if you click here on Report Builder, this Report Builder executable will automatically install on the server that you want to run it on. So this software is actually included with DPM. It's included with SQL Server as reporting service, or you can download this binary and install it locally. And what it does is it gives you a nice wizard, another wizard, another Hogwarts, another Harry Potter, to go and create your own report. So here, what I'm doing is I'm saying go out and find the DPM data source, because all that DPM keeps its metadata in is sitting within a database. So we can extract that database. Here we can say, okay, once we've got that data report, what I want to see is I want to see what's sitting within that particular data source. And we're going to be looking for a particular I'm going to use my current authentication to connect. What I'm going to be looking for is particular SQL views, and the one that I am interested in is the VWDPM recovery point disk. So you see that one's here, and of that, there are three bits and pieces. I want to know status, I want to know creation time, and I want to know data source name. So I click through these, and I am able to then put these together into a report that will allow someone to get a report on all of these parameters. So I just drag these across here. This is all very simple. Creation time, data source name, status. I might move that one above that one. I can choose a nice style for the report. And then what I can do here is the last thing I want to do is I want to allow the users to actually select from a list of data sources. So rather than having to type in the name, I can go data source name. I can choose a set of values, and I'm going to get the values from a query. And all that's going to do is it's going to go across to the DPM server and say, give me a list of all of the data sources that you're actually protecting. So I delete this item here and I drag this across here. I then give my report a nice name, and this might be self-service backup report. And then I can, you know, if I want, I can go and even change the colour, whatever. So make it blue. And click run. When I run, what I get is it's going to give me a preview. So this is very simple. Here I can go and say, OK, so we had that databases that we've put into protection. So we might choose the Australia database here. Click View Report, and we can have a look at the properties of the report to see if we're happy with it. It goes out, it generates the report, and what we'll see here in a second is it will come up with a list of all of the recovery points that exist for that particular database. If we're happy with that, we can click Save and then give it a name like TechEd 2012 report. And that will publish that to the Report Manager website, which will give us a web page which we see here. And we can hand that URL out to users, or we can go and add it to our self-service catalogue so that users are very quickly able to see, hey, I want to check if my particular exchange or my SharePoint or something's been backed up recently. Bang, I can go and find that information myself rather than lodging a ticket with the IT help desk and saying when was the last backup occurred. This is pulling it straight from the DPM server. It doesn't require any permissions on the part of the user because we're quite happy for them to extract that information. All they're knowing is when the last backup occurred.
All right. Now, just as last information, again, you saw us do this. Again, you also see we're backup guys and not SQL reporting gurus. I'm pretty sure you got some guys in your company that can make this a nice report and
all
just
girls.
A long, all girls, yes, a long list, things like that. But you see the possibilities you have. You saw it's from the report server. If you know something about SharePoint, you know you can put that in there. The self-service portal is also built on SharePoint technology, so you got a lot of possibilities to perform something nice for your end users.
So we've shown you the plumbing. You can dress up the plumbing and put something very nice around it, but the internal, the guts of what's going on. So with this move in IT towards IT being a service, where we're having users wanting to be able to provision their own workloads, you need to have some way to back it up. We've shown you the way to allow that to occur with a minimum of intelligence or effort on the user's part. The user just needs to know some very basic questions and can set that up. And of course, you can set up everything to be protected, but as I said earlier, a lot of these self-service workloads are not mission critical to the business or even mission critical to the user. You only want to be allocating space in your backup environment to workloads that need to be backed up, not just because someone says, hey, I want to back this up. And this is why you charge them. That way people will actually choose to back up only things that need to be backed up rather than just backing up everything because they can.
Yeah. And with that, before we actually start on the questions, we have to show this. Make sure you do your evaluations. Sorry, we really have to do that every time again. Anyway, make sure you do your evaluations. And with that, I say we open the floor for questions.
So, yep, any questions, please?
If not, that means...
Thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much, TechEd Amsterdam, for flying me from Australia.
And enjoy the rest of the show.